We jump back into our story in Genesis chapter 24 today, right around verse number 47, where we're looking at how Yitzhak is gaining a wife from Abraham's family up in the area of Mesopotamia from which he moved many years earlier. Now, we know that the servant is acting on behalf of Abraham. My guess is that Abraham was feeling kind of poorly after the recent death of his wife, Sarah, and was not even certain at that point whether he was going to make it through until the wedding could take place. Not a problem. We know he'll live for many, many years after this, but in the moment, it doesn't seem like he believes he's going to get much farther along in his life. So he sends this worker of his to make the arrangements, and the worker prays to God for a sign. And it's an amazing sign. It is that the woman that is the right woman would offer voluntarily to water all his camels, all 10 of them. And when Rebekah comes out, that's exactly what she does. And so he has now gone home with her and has been welcomed by her family to spend some time there. And he is telling his story about how all of this transpired and how he is sure that he is to take her back south, back to Canaan, to marry Yitzhak. And so here's where we're at in his story is Genesis 24, verse number 47. Then I asked her, whose daughter are you? And she said, the daughter of Bethuel, Nahor's son, whom Milcah bore to him. So I put the ring on her nose and the bracelets on her arms. And then I bowed my head and worshipped he who is, and blessed he who is, the God of my master Abraham, who had led me by the right way to take the daughter of my master's kinsman for his son. So this is his way of wrapping the story up and saying, and that's how I knew God had led me to just the right well at just the right time, to just the right lady that is going to be my master's son's wife. But of course, all that is dependent upon these guys agreeing to it. Bethuel, the dad, as well as Laban, the brother. So the servant says this, now then, if you're going to show steadfast love and faithfulness to my master, tell me. If not, tell me that I may turn to the right hand or to the left. So please let me know. Are you going to agree with this process, or do I need to keep looking around among other relatives to see who choice number two might be? So Laban and Bethuel answered and said, the thing has come from he who is. We cannot speak to you, bad or good. Behold, Rebekah is before you. Take her and go, and let her be the wife of your master's son, as he who is has spoken. So they're on board with this. They, remember, share the same faith in the one true God, at least the generation back that started this. Nahor, the brother of Abraham, apparently converted to the faith in the one true God at the same time that Abraham did. So here we are many years later, perhaps 50-some years later, and the son, Bethuel, and the grandson, Laban, also reference this God who is. Now, they're not using the divine name because that's Moses, the author, that's putting that in here. They would have probably said something about El Elyon, the God Most High, or our God, or my God, El Shaddai. And they're like, how can we deny what it is that God wants? So Rebekah is free to go and get married into the family. Verse 52, when Abraham's servant heard their words, he bowed himself to the earth before he who is. And then the servant brought out jewelry of silver and of gold and garments and gave them to Rebekah. And he also gave to her brother and to her mother costly ornaments. So now he brings out the real wealth. The reason for all of these camels is because gifts are going to be given to the whole family as part of this promise that she will be well taken care of in her new family. And he and the men who were with him ate and drank. They spent the night there. When they arose in the morning, he said, "Send me away to my master." And her brother and her mother said, "Let the young woman remain with us a while, at least 10 days, and after that she may go." When we've seen other wedding celebrations in Scripture, it's been for about a week, about one week of 7 days that the festivities went along. This one goes on a little bit longer, or at least they're hoping it'll go on a little bit longer, because this is likely to be the last time they see her. There's not going to be an awful lot of traveling back and forth between Mesopotamia and southern Canaan. So they want as much time as possible. 10 days is the suggested time. But he, meaning the servant, said to them, "Do not delay me, since he who is has prospered my way. Send me away that I may go to my master." So they want to get on the road. This is another reason why I think it's possible that the servant was concerned about Abraham's health, that he's been gone for probably several weeks now, and he knows it's going to take him several weeks to get back, and maybe his master was not in the greatest of health, or at least didn't appear to be when he left. So a couple of overnights is all he wants to put into this. So they say in verse 57, "Let us call the young woman and ask her." So they want to know, well, let's consider her sensitivities. Is she ready to go right this now, right this instant, this soon, with very little goodbye time with her family? So they called Rebekah and said to her, "Will you go with this man?" And she said, "I will go." So they sent Rebekah, their sister, and her nurse, and Abraham's servant and his men, and they blessed Rebekah and said to her, "Our sister, may you become thousands of 10,000s. May your offspring possess the gate of those who hate them." So nice little blessing of a multitude of descendants. And then kind of a little bit of a backhand. May your descendants be in charge of the cities of their enemies. And we've seen that sort of backhanded blessing before. Verse 61. Then Rebekah and her young women arose, so she's going to take her own little entourage, and rode on the camels and followed the man. And thus the servant took Rebekah and went his way. So now, several weeks, journey south. Verse 62 picks up at the end of the journey. Now, Yitzhak had returned from Beer Lahairoi and was dwelling in the Negev. Now, you should recognize Beer Lahairoi as the place where Hagar, when she was pregnant with Ishmael, had gone and been provided water. And she called the place the Well of the One Who Sees Me. Well, over the time since then, Yitzhak and perhaps his father Abraham have been using that same well as a place for the watering of their flocks. And it is from that place that Yitzhak comes farther north just in time to meet the returning caravan. So verse 63, Yitzhak went out to meditate in the field toward evening. So he's apparently got at least some sort of habit of prayer at night. And he lifted up his eyes and saw, and behold, there were camels coming. So he sees them in the distance. And then we change our perspective to the other side. Rebecca lifted up her eyes, and when she saw Yitzhak, she dismounted from the camel and said to the servant, "Who is that man walking in the field to meet us?" And the servant said, "It's my master." So she took her veil and covered herself. So each of them see the other at a distance first. And it appeared that Yitzhak is well aware that his father has made arrangements for him to get married to a cousin from up in Mesopotamia. So he's anticipating this. Maybe that was part of his prayer that night, is anticipating, what will it be like to meet my bride? And then she sees this guy coming and asks about him and is told, that's the one you're going to marry. And so she pulls her veil across her face because that's just appropriate protocol for that time period only unveil for him once he becomes her close relative, as in her husband. Verse 66, the servant told Yitzhak all the things that he had done. So he goes through the whole story again, all about God's intervention and how Rebecca was volunteering to water the camels. That says an awful lot about her character. And verse 67 then reports, Yitzhak brought her into the tent of Sarah, his mother. Now, these folks live in a tent city. And all the major players have their own tents to themselves. So Abraham has his own personal tent. Sarah had her own personal tent. Yitzhak would have had his own personal tent. The servants, they've got their own little tents that they live in. So Sarah's tent has been kept up as the tent of the, what I would call the queen of the encampment, the woman of the tent city, the governess, the lady that will call the shots for how things go on in the tent community. So it's been kept up because eventually Yitzhak's wife will take over that tent. It will become, for a better sense of the word, her office, where she takes over everything that Sarah used to do. So Yitzhak takes her to that tent, lets her get acquainted with it, and then over time, it says, he took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. And so Yitzhak was comforted after his mother's death. And we'll learn later that Yitzhak was 40 years old when the marriage finally takes place. And we know that he was a roughly, 36, I think, maybe 37, whenever his mother died. So somewhere in that three-year difference, that's when the trip took place, and that's where he gets to start knowing his future wife, and then eventually the wedding itself takes place. It's now at this point in the story that Moses wants to throw in information about Abraham's life after Sarah's death and after Rebecca and Yitzhak get married. He starts to feel better. You know, if we're correct in our surmising that he was feeling kind of bad and maybe even wonder if he was going to die, he clearly gets better. And eventually he comes to the conclusion, I want to get remarried. And that should not be all that surprising. Most widows and widowers who were happily married are often prone to wanting to get married a second time because they want that relationship. And so chapter 25, verse 1 says that Abraham took another wife whose name was Keturah. So this is his second wife, and he begins having children with her. She bore him Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. And then we go to the second generation. Jokshan fathered Sheba and Dedan. And then another generation, the sons of Dedan were Asherim, Letushim, and Leumim. Those I-M endings there seem to indicate people groups. It's a plural form in the Hebrew. And so the names may have been Asher and Latush and Lem. The sons of Midian were Ephah, Epher, Hanak, Abida, and Eldaah. All these were the children of Keturah. So she has quite a few children in that remaining time period of Abraham's life. Because he's going to live on to be 175. So if he was 140 when Yitzhak gets married, which he would have been, then he's got a good several decades left in order to start raising this next branch of his family. Now we get to the inheritance issue. Verse 5 says that Abraham gave all he had to Yitzhak. So Yitzhak is designated as the official heir. He is the son of the promise. He is the son of the blessing. So he is going to be put in charge of the tent city that Abraham is running right now. It will next belong to Yitzhak. But that doesn't mean that all of the other sons of Abraham are going to be ignored. They will receive their own special gifting from dad. And so verse 6 says, but the sons of his concubines, Abraham gave gifts. Now, concubines here, I think, is used in the more technical sense of Hagar, who was the surrogate mother that we've already met. So her son, Ishmael, is going to be receiving some of these gifts we're about to read about. And then the other concubine would be the second wife, Keturah. And so the concubines here are Hagar, Keturah. And Abraham gave gifts to these sons, and while he was still living, he sent them away from his son Yitzhak eastward to the east country. So he knows that Yitzhak is supposed to inherit the promised land. His descendants are supposed to be the people living in Canaan proper. And when we talk about Canaan proper, it's the parameters God gave to Abram way back at the beginning of his time in the Promised Land. From the Wadi of Egypt, which is the Wadi El Arish, which would be down south of Beersheba quite a little ways, all the way up to the bend in the Euphrates River, and then from the Mediterranean over to the Jordan. So all of that is supposed to be territory eventually lived in by Yitzhak's descendants. Knowing that, Abraham taught his other kids, you need to go east of the Jordan River and you take over all of that territory over there. That will be the place that you need to inherit, and I'm going to give you kind of a beginning stock of what you need in order to get your own lives started well. So he probably passed on a lot of his animals and probably some of his servants, his staff, maybe some of the actual material, the tents and equipment like that. And so he gives that all to these guys and says, now you guys head on east and stay away from the territory that's going to belong to the descendants of Yitzhak. And so we will run into some of these descendants later living over in that part of the world. One of them, I think, is pretty famous. And that would be Eob or Job, because he will be one of the great men of the sons of the East. And that's actually how this group of descendants of Abraham are going to be termed. And this is another reason why so many of the people living in the Middle East are related into Abraham, because they were spread out all over the place fairly early on in the history of the Old Testament. Verse number 7, we're ready to say goodbye to Abraham. These are the days of the years of Abraham's life, 175 years. And Abraham breathed his last and died in a good old age, an old man and full of years, and was gathered to his people. Yitzhak and Ishmael, his sons, buried him in the cave of Machpelah, in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar, the Hittite, east of Mamre, the field that Abraham purchased from the Hittites. And there Abraham was buried with Sarah, his wife. And then after the death of Abraham, God blessed Yitzhak, his son, and Yitzhak settled at Beer Lahai-Roi. Now, we're getting slightly ahead of the chronology here, because in the next story about Isaac, Abraham will still be alive. But the way that Moses is writing this document, the moment he starts talking about the spreading out of Abraham's descendants throughout the Middle East, he immediately wants to start talking about how Abraham passed away and his two major sons, his eldest son Ishmael and the son of his promise, Yitzhak, how they buried him in the cave of Machpelah, gave him this honorable send-off, and then they began living their stories. So even though we're saying goodbye to Abraham right now, I want us to keep him in mind during the earliest part of his grandchildren's lives. He will actually die when the twins, Esau and Jacob, are about 15. So say goodbye to him momentarily, but he'll be back because we'll kind of roll the story back here in a little bit. Verse number 12, these are the generations of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar, the Egyptian, Sarah's servant, bore to Abraham. So this is a section of genealogies, and this is another one of our Toledoth passages. These are the names of the sons of Ishmael, named in the order of their birth: Nebaioth, the firstborn of Ishmael, and Kedar, Abiel, Mibsam, Mishma, Duma, Masa, Hadad, Tema, Yetur, Naphish, Kedema. And some of these become the names of places in the Middle East. And many of the peoples, the Bedouin peoples of the Sinai and of the Arabian Peninsula, come from Ishmael. And the Islamic prophet wannabe, Muhammad, was tied into this family tree. I think he was something like the 37th grandson generation of Ishmael. These are the sons of Ishmael, and these are their names by their villages, by their encampments, 12 princes according to their tribes. And that's exactly what God told Abraham as a prophecy, that there would be 12 sons that came through Ishmael, just like there will be 12 sons that come through Jacob. And these are the years of the life of Ishmael, 137 years. Then he breathed his last and died and was gathered to his people. So he lives a pretty good old long life. He dies, and of course, his family continues to spread. They settled from Havilah, to Shur, which is opposite Egypt in the direction of Assyria, and he settled over against all his kinsmen. And that fits, again, the prophecy that he would be stretched out, that is, his descendants, his family line, would be stretched out all along the northern Sinai and then over into Saudi Arabia, as we call it today, into the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, all the way up probably almost to Mesopotamia. So all through that swath of land, there's going to be the Ishmaelites. And some of the Ishmaelites are going to be causing trouble for the Israelis at some point. These are the generations of Yitzhak, Abraham's son. Abraham fathered Yitzhak, and Yitzhak was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to be his wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean of Padan Aram, and the sister of Laban, the Aramean. The marriage takes place in 2036 BC, thereabouts, but they don't immediately have children because there is another problem conception-wise in this generation as well. So verse 21, Yitzhak prayed to He Who Is for his wife because she was barren. And then He Who Is granted his prayer and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. Now, it doesn't tell the timing here, and we're going to run out of time before we can do that. I will just say it took a good 20 years before they could get pregnant and have a pair of twins. So not nearly as long as Abraham and Sarah waited, but still a pretty good long time. And when we pick up the story tomorrow, we'll talk about the prophecy that was given to Yitzhak on behalf of these two unborn children.